He said, to be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it's nobler in the mind is... I was like, whether tis nobler, Julian?
Oh.
Whether tis nobler. You can't be saying it's.
Whoops.
I was very upset. Whether tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune or to take arms against the sea of troubles and by opposing end them. Tis nobler. Upsetting for me. Hello and welcome to our Riverdale podcast brought to you by the Aficionados Podcast Network. My name is Robin Jeffrey. I'm a 28-year-old actor and artist. I like brooding anti-heroes, feminist agendas, and I remember way too many details that no one else cares about. You can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey pretty much everywhere, and our fun fact for this episode is, what's your favorite Shakespeare play? Listen, I know that this episode's all about Arthur Miller, and they talk a lot about Arthur Miller, but I don't know that many Arthur Miller plays other than Death of a Salesman, which they already talked about. So we're gonna do Shakespeare, because they did a bunch of Shakespeare stuff too. Mm-hmm. I have been in a parody of Hamlet, and then actually Twelfth Night and actually King Lear, and then so I really like Twelfth Night and King Lear because of that. I like Hamlet because I understand it really well, and then I also like Othello because I studied that one in school and it makes a lot of sense to me. So those are probably my favorites.
Fair enough. Those are all really good choices.
Thanks.
You actually named mine in yours.
Okay.
Okay. And my name is Brittany Ray. I'm a 33-year-old artist and writer. I like badass moms and long naps. I'm on Twitter at Britannia, where I can be found attempting to be interesting and screaming about how I can only read 300 tweets a day before being locked out of my account. Thanks, Elon.
Yeah.
And my favorite Shakespeare play is Othello. It was the first one that we studied where I actually wanted to engage with the text and wasn't bored to tears.
Yeah.
Which, like, I know I sound like a friggin' simpleton when I'm like, oh, you were bored by Shakespeare? And I'm like, listen, everyone has their Shakespeare where they finally understand Shakespeare. Mine was Othello.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's hard to get it until you've seen it performed as well. Like, the inflections of people's voices and their facial expressions makes it make so much more sense once you see it that way, I feel like, too.
That's actually a great point.
Yeah.
And I engaged with the text itself. Like, that was the first story where I was reading it and I was like, oh, I really like this.
Yeah, I really like the characters in Othello. And did you know how Desdemona dies?
Oh, here we go. No, Robin, tell me how Desdemona dies, you absolute psycho.
She gets smothered by a pillow.
Every once in a while, when we lived together and Robin was irritated with me, she would look at me and go, you know how Desdemona died in Othello? And it was just, she was gonna...
And then holding a pillow.
Yeah, she was gonna suffocate me.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand.
But I never did.
That's true. Congratulations on not committing homicide. I'm really proud of you.
You're welcome.
It takes a strong woman.
Yeah. The other one that I actually forgot to mention that I've seen performed and also seen, more modern remakes of is Comedy of Errors. Ignore everything else. I love Comedy of Errors, actually. So I would say that's probably, my number one if I had to pick, a number one. And then number two, probably Twelfth Night, because who doesn't love She's the Man?
I was going to say, the great thing about Shakespeare is that it has been reinterpreted so many times that we have the modern things that we can name as, oh, yeah, I love She's the Man, which is code for, oh, yeah, that's a great Shakespeare play.
Yeah, exactly. You're just like, wow, Lion King is so, the story in Lion King is so great.
My favorite part.
It's because it's Hamlet.
Exactly. Like, my favorite interpretation of Shakespeare is where they said he was gay in Doctor Who. I think that's funny. You know?
It's funny.
It's funny.
No, he was. Yeah.
He was bisexual.
Yeah.
Pretty obvious. Anyway, this has nothing to do with anything. Today we have words to say about episode 713 of Riverdale, The Crucible. Oh, and my
wife
says that her favorite Shakespeare is Much Ado About Nothing, and that is the right answer.
Very good choice. I feel like you could pick any Shakespeare play, and I'd be like, okay, you know, unless you're picking some, I'm sorry, but if you pick some random historical.
You can't pick Romeo and Juliet, I don't believe you.
Yeah, first of all, if you pick Romeo and Juliet, I'm just like, that's kind of like the mainstream answer. Mm-hmm. And then also if you choose some random historical, like Henry the whatever, I'm just like, okay.
Wait, are you saying that you don't respect people if they choose Henry the VIII?
That's a boring choice. Like, I do respect you, but I judge you, basically.
You know what? Fair enough, dude.
Yeah. And our step-by-step notes for this season were written by Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, who is our absolute hero.
Once again, could not do this without Blanche. Deserves 30,000 awards, maybe, as well as an Olympic gold medal. Also, maybe a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, all of those. The Crucible is a 1953 play by American playwright Arthur Miller. It is a dramatized and partially fictionalized story of the Salem witch trials that took place in the Massachusetts Bay Colony during 1692 to 93. Miller wrote the play as an allegory for McCarthyism when the United States government persecuted people accused of being communists. Miller was questioned by the House of Representatives Committee on Un-American Activities in 1956 and convicted. Very, very relevant.
Children.
In multiple different ways.
In case you need to hear this. Questioning your government and holding them accountable is the patriotic thing to do. It is, in fact, the most patriotic thing to do, which is why neither Robin nor I celebrate Canada Day.
Correct. We are recording this on Canada Day, and I simply couldn't care less. My cousin's wedding was yesterday, and when I came out from the hotel before we drove back home so that I could come and record this, and it was just covered in Canadian flags, and I was just like, oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Anyway.
That's happening. I'm not going to say that you can't celebrate it, but I am going to point out that there are other things that you could celebrate that are not about colonization.
It's crazy to think that Archie in this episode is reading The Crucible and it just came out 2 years ago. That's so weird.
Wow, that is weird. Right? Yeah, that's crazy.
Like, they're like, read this new play. Yeah, right. Like, Mrs. Thornton was just like, have you heard this new Arthur Miller play?
I didn't even clock that. That's good catch.
Yeah. As for thoughts from listeners, one of them is me. I cannot believe that we did not point out the fact that the person who walks in on Veronica almost kissing is known girl kisser Mary Andrews.
Oh my god, duh.
Like, she didn't see it. I think they turned around enough or whatever, but even if she did, she'd probably be like, yeah, I get it. You know?
Listen, Robin, we need to...
She's a safe space.
We need to speak for a moment about the news that we got via Meech and Amick. And it's because...
Yeah.
I now have to believe in my heart that it's a Mary Alice endgame, or otherwise I'm just going to be upset.
We got several things in that interview. I do have thoughts on it later in my notes, because I feel like we're going to go on a huge-ass rant.
Yeah.
the Alice's partner thing. So basically, you know... I'll get into it a little bit right now, but then we'll go into it later. Basically, Majin revealed that Skeet did not come back. He was supposed to, and then scheduling concerns. I'm like, what schedule was more important than this? But okay. Mm-hmm. So Alice at FP's story ended where it ended, and that is rough to hear, and we'll talk about it later. But Alice does say that she gets a happy ending with a partner that loves her or something like that. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not freaking how.
And also, that's very gender-neutral language. How fascinating.
Correct. So I really hope it's not Frank, especially if we're staying in the 50s, which is another thing that she revealed, is that we do stay in the 50s, but, like, some different things happen. My hope is that we sort of go in the way of the Lost finale, which is, like, I hope this doesn't spoil too much, but the Lost finale or Lost season 6, but I...
The show's been over for over 10 years.
Yeah, but I mean, I hope they weren't taking inspiration for Lost Season 6 from this, because if they did, they did it wrong.
Bro, I want you to...
because this is not how Lost Season 6 went.
Like, I want you to know that is also exactly how Alice in Borderland ended, which was, oh, everyone wakes up in an alternate reality, and then the main couple reunites while at a vending machine.
What? That's weird.
And they get all their memories back.
Okay, then. But...
That's just what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, that is just... That's literally it.
Literally how Lost.
But yeah, I'm hoping... So, basically, Lost Season 6, there was sort of, like, this weird alternate dimension thing. It's fine. It's fun. But half the season still takes place on the island with the people we love, you know? So if they were taking... inspiration, like Riverdale, from that, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, we're supposed to actually...
That wasn't what you were doing.
Need the characters we know at some point as well.
But then, if they're taking inspiration from the Lost finale, the finale takes place where there's, like, we're in that alternate dimension and the regular timeline, and then they get the memories from both, basically.
Which I actually...
No spoilers, it's beautiful and gorgeous. So go and watch Lost.
Oh, you have to.
It's perfectly done. I'm hoping that that's the goal for them for the finale, but I don't feel optimistic about it due to them fumbling the bag so hard so far.
Yeah, it's Riverdale, so they will fumble the bag all the way to the finish line. But having said that, they are doing pretty okay right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Sure. All right. Okay. Do you want to do Tudor Boot?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to go through my other thoughts from listeners, which is just that Dave was talking to us on Discord, and he is absolutely convinced that the girl that Betty would know that Veronica kissed is Natalie Wood.
Dave, you're a fucking genius.
He's convinced.
Oh, Dave, you're so smart.
He also brought up that Reggie shouldn't actually be number 17 because he explained that there's this thing with digits.
Okay.
So, like, you shouldn't, at least not until recently, and this is sort of how I understand it after Dave explained it.
Okay.
That you can have, like, multiple digits. So, like, let's do 14 as an example, which is the number that I wanted Reggie to be. He can be, it wouldn't be anything over, like, 50-something, because the digits need to always be, like, 5 or less.
I don't think I understand.
Because the referees, me neither until Dave sent, like, a video. So basically, the referees need to be able to, like, put each of the digits on their one hand.
Oh, got it!
So, like, if it was, like, 54, they would show a 5, and then they would turn their hand around and show 4, so that they could show which jersey they were talking about, which player.
Wait, so why was I always allowed to be 17?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe...
Maybe soccer's different.
I think it changed recently, potentially, or something. But basically, I think Dave was saying that in the 50s, that should not be true.
It was, like, recently, bestie, that was, like, 2005.
Yeah, I think he meant recently, like, 2000s-ish, I think.
Got it. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe I'm speaking for Dave. I don't know. But either way, he explained this thing. And that's what he explained.
That is absolutely fascinating. That makes a lot of sense. I like that.
Yeah. Let's do toot or boot, Biddy.
All right. I'm going to give this a toot.
Me too. I had fun.
I was standing here telling Sam that I don't know if it's that we are so used to crap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I say crap affectionate because, like, this show isn't good, yeah. But it's good.
Yeah.
It's not good, but it's great. Do you know what I mean? And so every time a good episode comes along, I'm like, wait, sorry, is this good? Or am I just so used to trash? But I think it's good. Yeah.
So next episode is the musical episode. And then then we have a hiatus. And speaking of, actually, you guys, after we record the musical episode, I have a surgery. And so since we have that hiatus, I'm actually going to take my time editing that one. I'm going to get it done, obviously, before the next episode comes out. But I really appreciate your guys' patience with that one, just so I can take my time editing it so I'm not, like, killing myself that weekend after literally getting surgery. Thanks, I appreciate that. And then after...
I think everyone's going to be fine with that, bud.
Right? I thought so. And then the episode after that just came out, and it is the Miss Teen Riverdale pageant. And half of me was like, that sounds so fun. And then the other half of me was like, my friends are getting mutilated by a comet.
Yeah, it's very much...
And this is happening.
Oh, this is fun. This is campy. This would be a great second season of a show.
Right.
Not the back half of the final season.
Yeah, so it's like, every time an episode comes out, I'm like, I'm having fun. And then when I look at the season as a whole, I'm like, but this isn't what I wanted as a final season.
This isn't what I signed up for. I'm having a great time. I'm really enjoying the writers doing well, which felt gross to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm kind of confused and not really sure where this is heading in terms of, like, how this is going to wrap up the entire show.
Yeah.
So I think maybe we're just looking at another, like, the 100 season where it's like, okay, like, this is good for what it is, but it's not what I started watching and it's not the resolution I'm trying to have.
I want to say that halfway through season 6 of the 100, I started being like, things are bad, I feel bad and gross. And then by the time we got to halfway through season 7, I was like, I'm angry.
Yeah.
And so I know that I'm not gonna feel as bad about this as I did about that, at least, but still not good.
Oh yeah, like at least it's not disrespectful to the show that came before it. It's just different.
Honestly, like, they, the 100 took their characters and absolutely bastardized them and made them, like, really bad.
That's what happens when you hate your fans.
And at least, like, yeah, at least these characters are the characters, and some of them are even, like, better than the original versions of themselves.
All of the characters that drove me insane are far more tolerable.
Yeah. So, like, at least there's that, but it still feels weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in this episode, Blanche and I discussed... And we have split the storylines into this really small Ethel and Jughead storyline and everything else, which we have titled the storyline Communism.
Yeah, I have no notes.
So that is what we are going to do.
I am thrilled.
Did you want to cover Communism or the tiny little Ethelhead?
Oh, I'm going to be really annoying and choose Ethelhead because I have a lot to say about the Communism storyline and I think we'll hear enough from my voice.
No problem at all.
Yeah.
Great. So Blanche said about this episode, oh my god, there was so much dialogue again. We are going to do the Ethelhead storyline. And she said, storyline title is a joke. I'm Team Tabitha forever, which I do appreciate.
I appreciate it, and also, same. Jughead and Ethel walk to a newspaper stand to buy the comic they co-authored that's just come out. They ask the guy working there for two copies, and Ethel excitedly tells him that they're behind it. The owner is disgusted and says he sent the Pep Comics bundle back, and he no longer smells quote-unquote smut. You don't know what smut is.
Me? Yeah, I do.
He calls it un-American and tells them to get lost. No, he doesn't know what smut is.
Oh.
Robin's like, I know what that is. I've been a fan of before.
I was like, hey, listen, I'm alive.
I'm asexual, not stupid.
Yeah.
So he calls them un-American and tells them to get lost.
Jughead writing smut is the funniest thing I've ever heard.
100%.
That's hilarious.
To accuse Jug of all people of being a smut peddler. I understand that smut used to mean something very different, but to hear it in today's modern context is absolutely hysterical. Jughead is a
so funny
porn author, PWP on AO3. He has got the most lyrical username, and all of his titles are lowercase with long summaries.
And it's RPF.
Why is it RPF?
Yeah. Just because it is.
Fair enough. Jug and Ethel sit down with Fieldstone to tell him about what happened. Jughead says there's nowhere that Pep Comics are being sold anymore. Fieldstone doesn't seem surprised and says it's happening all over the country. It's called censorship. Newsstands are being raided and bundles of comics are being returned. Nowadays, selling comics is comparable to selling pornography. Nothing is new. People are spreading the word to each other to not buy violent stories. Okay. They're even sending hate mail, which is far more violent than any of the stories. Jughead asks what they should do, and Fieldstone says they're just going to quote-unquote weather the storm. He plans on calling other publishers to see how they're doing. Ethel asks she can take a few copies of the issue she illustrated, and Fieldstone says, have at it. They have more than enough.
I have a complaint.
What is your complaint?
Fieldstone keeps calling Ethel freckles, and I don't see no freckles on this girl's face. Why are we calling her that? If she ain't got no freckles.
Is it because she's ginger?
Maybe? I guess. I don't know. I'm just like, she's...
I think Shannon Purser has freckles.
I just feel like we never get close enough to her that I'm like... And I was scrutinizing. I was looking this episode, but I don't know. Maybe I missed it.
Fair enough.
Where's, so we see Glenn this episode in the other storyline. I'm like, where's...
We sure do.
Glenn gonna work if this is a comic book place and not an FBI office anymore?
Out of his car.
Yeah, right.
That was the answer. Jughead and Ethel look at their issue for the first time. They're so excited. It looks so good. Jughead remarks how disappointed he is that no one will get to see it. The two of them exchange a glance. They grab a stack of comics and head out. This is the right solution.
It was perfect. It was wonderful. My only complaint is that, and honestly, she takes it. She doesn't even take it a weird way, which I sort of expected, but he has his full arm around her shoulder. And I'm like, stop. You're going to confuse her.
I know. I was like, Jughead, be careful.
Luckily there wasn't any lingering moment where she was like, he touched me. But I also was just like, stop, be careful.
I think they're just going to be bros now.
Which makes me so happy.
Let's just keep our fingers crossed.
I really hope so. Yeah.
Or else we'll have a resurgence of, what the hell is her name? Ethelhead?
Yeah, Ethelhead, correct, yeah.
And I already had to watch Varchi in one episode. I'm not doing this. At Pops, Jughead is secretly selling comics. A montage of people come in and sit at his booth to buy one, while Ethel discreetly hands him issues from the booth behind them.
I love it.
This is prohibition for comics. I am absolutely obsessed.
It was great. It was nice to see Ben. I like seeing Ben doing stuff.
Little Ben.
And I love it.
An adventurous scout sits in Jughead's booth and asks if they have a certain issue, Pit of the Perverse number 32. Jughead says it's such a hot issue that he's gonna need 25 cents over the original price of 10 cents. That's a big markup. Ethel hands him a copy from the other... Wait a minute, the markup is free. They got all of these for free.
Yeah, they took it.
These little capitalists.
Yeah.
Ethel hands him a copy from the other booth. Before he can sell the comic, Keller and the Adventure Scout troop leader barge into Pops and catch him red-handed. There are so many sting operations happening in this episode.
Yeah, I love this little drug dealer. Jughead that made me laugh so much and his sunglasses inside. My favorite thing about this whole scene was the guy going, I'll give you 20 cents for it, and Jughead goes, and I quote, no.
He's straight up like, yeah, no, that's unacceptable. I'm gonna need exactly what I asked or you're not getting buckus.
The absolute hubris of these two this episode makes me laugh so much. It was so good. I love it.
They are absolute fools. I had a great time with all of their adventures this episode.
Me too.
Okay. Back at the train car, Jughead and Ethel are not fazed. At least they made some cash and got the comic out there. I wonder if that... They could launch their own comic publisher.
Ooh.
Jug asks her how she feels now that she's a legit published artist. Ethel says she's proud of herself, and Jughead says that she should be. again, I hope this is platonic because I'm really loving their platonic friendship.
Me too. And there's still no hot dog in this scene. So what the heck?
Severe lack of hot dog.
I know. So rude.
We're being robbed.
What's the dog for? Come on.
We're being robbed.
So true.
Featherhead, Werther's, and Keller look at the pile of comics they collected from Jughead and everywhere else that sells comic books. Werther says that they haven't been persuasive enough in getting them banned. He says now is the moment for full measures. Again, it's crazy how prescient all of this is.
Okay, then have fun doing whatever you're doing.
I want you. We're 5 seconds away from this. Like, but we are a week away from this at most.
Yeah.
Jughead sees a line of people with armfuls of comics going into Featherhead's office. He asks Dilton what's up, and Dilton says Featherhead is buying comics off of students. Jughead does not like the sound of this, but Dilton says there's no harm since he's read them already. I'm like, my brother in Christ, there is always harm when the oppressor wants your literature.
Yeah, I love Jughead saying, nah, he's trying to dipsy doodle us.
Dipsy doodle was an absolutely great line.
Not a dipsy doodle.
Is that one of your favorite line awards?
Yeah.
Yeah, because dipsy doodle's fucking funny.
How much do you think he's paying?
I would not be surprised if he was doing 50 cents to a dollar a comic.
Oh, wow. Yeah, oh, I totally get why kids, you know, inflation, kids would totally do that because, you know, they're like, we don't have jobs
and
we need money.
Fascists will pay pretty pennies to prove that anyone can be bought.
Yeah.
And they're kids, they don't know.
And I'm sure Clifford is helping him pay for that too, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That night, everyone at Riverdale High watches as Werther's, Featherhead, and Clifford Blossom throw all the comics they've collected into a fire pit.
Cool. It's giving banned books, it's giving Crucible. Gross.
It's giving bigots afraid of people with ideas that are not the same as their own.
Correct.
It's giving fear, it's giving weakness, it's giving Republican.
Well, you guys, I know that we just started, but before we go into the communism storyline, we're going to talk to you guys about Patreon. It's a service in which you can donate to some of your favorite creators. Ours is patreon.com/theafficionados. If you would like early access to the rest of this season, that is where you will find it. The $1 level, $1 a month gets you early access to all of it. This one comes out at least a day in advance, so seems worth it to me. I don't know. $2 is our Discord server. $5 is 10% off at three different small businesses, including mine and including Brittany's. And $10 is our Patreon-only podcast, which people seem to really enjoy. And if you join now, you have over 50 episodes of backlog to listen to. So go and check it out.
That's crazy.
We'd really appreciate that. Yeah. All right. Communism?
Communism. Shall we, comrade?
All right. Jughead sits in his train car typing his narration. We cut to Archie alone after school as Thornton presumably is helping him with his poetry. Veronica runs into Glenn in the elevator. Betty comes into her bedroom to find her typewriter and phone missing. I am so proud of myself for clocking Glenn.
That was, I want you guys to know, Robin immediately texted and went, Glenn?
I went, Glenn?
Because she always watches it before us. And so I was like, what about Glenn? Glenn's back.
Yeah, I was proud of myself for clocking him before we saw his guest star name. Before I was like, if we see that name, I know for sure it was Glenn. And it was.
You should be.
Me and Meadow were like searching up Glenn afterwards. And we were just like, I was like, yeah, like looking up his Riverdale page. And I was like, oh yeah, deceased. Dismembered by the trash bag killer.
Right, of course. Yeah.
That's how Glenn died.
That's how he went. Totally normal show.
So I assume that Alice stole her phone and her typewriter so that she can't communicate or, like, anything.
Oh, yeah. If there's one thing that they fear, it's access to information.
Gross yuck.
Yeah. Again, gross yuck. How am I supposed to defend Alice when she's gone full fash?
Yeah. All right. Betty and Kevin finished performing their scene from a Tennessee Williams play for English class. Does Tennessee Williams have lots of plays?
Yes.
I was like, I feel like if I was gonna guess, I would say Glass Menagerie.
Oh, that is not what I would have guessed.
Or Streetcar Named Desire.
That's what I would have guessed.
Okay, both of those are out by now. So either way, we don't know which one they do it from. They just write Tennessee Williams on the board, so who knows. Thornton praises them, but the class is soon interrupted by Featherhead, Keller, and Clifford Blossom barging in. They escort her out, saying this is no longer her class. Clifford stays behind and tells her students that she's been fired, and for the time being, Penelope will be replacing her.
Sure.
Archie is shook and asks, what's the dealio? Clifford tells them that Thornton is supposedly a communist.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
She literally was, like, bringing up Broadway, and they were like, that's enough!
I'm like,
like, excuse me, she's...
That's too woke of you to talk about Broadway.
She's just a theater kid.
She's just a theater kid, please.
It's like arresting... What's the lady's name from High School Musical?
Darbus.
It's like... Yes, Darbus. It's like arresting Darbus. It's just... You look silly.
She really has been giving Darbus this whole time, and I love that about her.
I know, isn't it cute?
You also shouldn't do this in front of the class, you heathens. You're just trying to make people look bad.
Well, It's hubris, right? They think because they do this in front of the children, it will scare the children instead of enrage them, and it'll scare them out of, you know, they'll be like, oh, if anyone can be accused of communism, then I must roll over.
Yeah.
And... obey.
Yeah, and I'm like, I know that the Clifford's the mayor, but I'm also like, how's this your damn business, though?
And it's weird. Why is he so involved at the school?
Go away.
Like, it's...
Ugh, he's so annoying.
Well, I mean, I guess it makes sense because, like, it's the next generation, and...
Yeah.
His children are there, and I'm like, but maybe if you hadn't peaked in high school, you might be happier.
And he literally drops see something, say something.
I know, wasn't that crazy?
Oh my god. Cheryl and Jason are sitting there like, hey, why is my whole family in this room?
And,
I'm uncomfortable.
The fact that Cheryl just looks like, oh my, like, she's humiliated.
Uh-huh. Penelope goes, the Red Menace has come to Riverdale. And I literally out loud, I went, you're the Red Menace, bitch!
Bro, the hilarity of them being dressed in all red and saying those lines.
When I tell you.
You'll never get a show like Riverdale again.
Dude, so many people were wearing red this episode. And, like, definitely on purpose. Like, Frank walked in to Archie's garage and I was like, more red. Like, it's like everyone's wearing red. And you can tell that it was purposeful because Machen was like, art. We're doing art here today.
Oh my god, I forgot Machen did... Majin directed this, didn't she?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's good. She got some good performances out of those kids.
She did. It's true.
Yeah. Kids. They are literally my age.
Yeah, some of them are older than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the student lounge, the gang, minus Jughead and Reggie, because Jughead's in his own storyline and Reggie's not in this episode, Charles got a little break, are discussing what happened. Betty asks Archie if he's noticed anything weird about Thornton during their after-school meetings. He says, no, this has to be a mistake. Cheryl disagrees because they couldn't just kick her out without clear evidence. Veronica explains that may not be true. In Hollywood, everyone is paranoid because of McCarthyism. She explains what that is. The senator claimed that Russian spies were using TV and movies to brainwash the American public. He also had a list of accused communists that he came up with himself and would pressure people to name names. Kevin says, this is America, and if you're innocent, you have nothing to worry about.
You're stupid, Kevin.
Kevin, you ignorant slut.
Exactly. I think it's so funny that McCarthyism was based on the Russians brainwashing Americans, and that was bad, and now we're in a time where the Russians have brainwashed Americans, and they all think that it's neat.
Yeah.
You're idiots.
Yeah. Cheryl's like, well, my dad can't just get people fired for nothing. I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure he can.
Bro, I'm pretty sure that's like his whole thing.
But okay. Blanche said, Kevin's ignorant patriotism annoys me to no end. He's always been like this because his dad's a cop. But in this timeline specifically, he's a gay person dating a black man in 1955 and he still feels this way? Educate yourself, gay Kevin.
Yes, but here's the thing. He's still a white man. He's still a cisgender white man.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I think it's absolutely wonderful that at every turn, this show reminds us that just because you are a minority in terms of your sexuality does not mean that you understand the struggle of minorities who have it way worse than you do.
Well, that's also like, I mean, obviously they're trying to tell me that Archie's not gay or in a minority, which I simply don't believe. But like, that's part of what they're doing with Archie too, is that like, he's constantly making mistakes even when he's trying his best.
Yep.
You know, he's like, he cannot escape the fact that the way he's raised and the privilege that he has been afforded affects and bleeds into everything in his life.
It changes his complete worldview. It colors how he approaches every conversation, every interaction. It's such a good lesson to learn. And I like that they did this with Kevin, because Kevin often does suffer from I'm the main character syndrome. And I'm like, you're not the main character. Be quiet.
Yeah. You're quite far away from the front of the pyramid here.
Exactly.
Clifford and Penelope sit Cheryl down, saying they heard about her kissing Tony on Halloween. She denies it. Penelope says she has a condition, but they were able to work out a deal. Blanche points out with who, which is a good point.
The cops.
If she cooperates with the investigation at the high school, her reputation will be fine. Clifford says being a communist and being gay are both un-American. They give her a list of names of gay students, including her, Tony, Kevin, and Clay, and says they need her to corroborate them. Cheryl is not about this and asks what they'll do if she won't. Kick her out? She'd enjoy that. She starts to walk away, but Clifford screams at her. He says they'll take away the vixens if she won't cooperate, and she cries and runs away.
Oh, I really like this because I really like that in the past, we would have spent the whole episode questioning whether or not Cheryl would turn someone in.
Ah, yeah.
You know?
That's a good point, yeah.
And now it's like, they threatened her with that, and I was like, oh, well, Cheryl's already made her decision. She would never do that to them.
Yeah, I like that too. And here's the thing, is that, like, it's interesting because she loves the vixens so much. And if it was me, I would give that up so, so fast. And, like, she does eventually, obviously. But I'm, like, wondering, what would the equivalent for this be for me? You know? Because I'm just like, I would just give it up so fast.
I actually had this happen to me.
I, like, can't what was it for you?
So it wasn't for, obviously, it wasn't because I was queer. Mm-hmm. It was because my grades weren't doing well. And, of course, at the time, I had undiagnosed ADHD and had a really hard time, especially with math. And my mom told me I would no longer be in art classes. I would instead be attending extra tutoring in all of those subjects because I couldn't get my shit together enough to study or do things like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking that my world was like over because art is, of course, like how I express myself as a person and also is a really good tool for me to learn. And that was like my world was ending.
Yeah.
Being told that because I couldn't overcome something that I didn't even know I had, but she knew that I had, that if I just buckled down, I would be able to overcome those obstacles and become a good student. And of course, that was never going to happen.
Right. That's interesting. I feel like I appreciate you saying that because I think that a lot of what I thought about this storyline for Cheryl is that I thought it was about power. I thought it was about how then she wouldn't have this power over the vixens anymore, but it's actually about, like, community, I think.
It's about community, and it's about having something that is hers and no one else's.
Yeah.
And is also a creative outlet for her because she's trapped in a very oppressive period, living in a really stressful time. So, like, one of the creative ways, it's also, like, it's exercise, it's community, it's creativity, it's a home. It's a safe space. It's a safe space.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And I actually won my fight. I got to stay. I fought my ass off. And in the end, I manipulated my way out of it by calling in my grandpa.
Nice.
Yes. But Cheryl doesn't win. And I think that's really sad.
Yeah, it is sad. So on that list, you know, we have Cheryl, Tony, Kevin, Clay, and then a bunch of randoms. And I'm like, well, this list is not complete because Betty and Veronica and Archie are not on this list. Are on this list.
Like, what about all those queers?
They're also queer. I wonder if she had just been like, oh, okay. If she could have, like, reversed psychology'd her way out of it and her parents be like, oh, okay, well, never mind. We'll figure out something else.
Actually, you know what I mean? That would have been kind of iconic if she was like, then take them. I don't know what. Okay. It would have given them more time to think of a worse punishment.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. That is a good point. Yeah. So Veronica arrives home to find Hiram's luggage outside her apartment. Ugh. She walks in and Hiram is there sitting on the couch. He says he wanted to come see her. Veronica sees right through this and knows he, as always, has an ulterior motive. She asks, what is it this time? He deflects and gives her a Glamourge egg, of course. She also sees through this and asks why Hermione's mad at him this time. He says he was just casually flirting with somebody. He really wanted to see Veronica, though, get to know her life and friends, and they hug.
Bullshit.
Yeah. It was really cool to see his bag, like the bag that says HL on it, was like from season one. It was like mid to late season one. Hermione got like a whole bunch of money in that bag. Yeah. And we were like, yeah, Hermione Lodge. And then it turned out to have been Hiram's. And that was like before we had ever even seen Hiram. So he was like so mysterious and cool at that time, you know? Yep. It's cool to see Glamourge eggs come back. It's like, wow, they were a thing even in the 50s, which is cool. And then also Hiram is wearing literally the same thing as always. Like everyone else's outfits are different in the 50s, but Hiram is just classic, timeless, I guess.
It was kind of weird. Oh, yeah. His costumes do look the same, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
That's why it was so weird to me. I was like, you look the same. Why don't you look different?
Yeah.
It was weird seeing the Glamourge eggs, actually, because, like, they're Russian.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, like, having that symbol of, like, Russian, like, wealth in America was interesting. I think that was a nice, like, act of, it was like a little Easter egg for us to show us Hiram was not what he seemed because he was already gifting something that was quite ethically dicey.
Right, right, yeah. So, Brittany, now that we know that we are not going back to the original timeline, is Hiram just dead?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Because I never believed that he actually died, that Veronica literally put a hit out on him and he died. I did not believe that.
Well,
and now
that's because
I think he just is.
Well, we didn't believe it because Roberto said not to believe that he was dead. And then I guess he decided to change his mind and change the entire show.
Well, he was like, well, Hiram is coming back. And I'm like, well, did you mean in the 50s? Because I think that just means he's dead.
Yeah, I think that Roberto had a different idea in mind. And then when they were like, oh, let's just go back to the 50s for this one, something different happened.
That's crazy. So, like, I think after this, I, like, eventually have to go back and do a rewatch of this whole show.
That's gonna hurt.
Yep. And it's gonna be weird because, like, because I was always like, Hiram's not dead. And now when Veronica says he's dead, I just have to be like, oh, so he died. He's dead.
What?
That's gonna be weird.
Which season did he die in again? It wasn't the last season, was it? It was the season before?
I'm pretty sure it was season 6 that she said that he died. One second.
Please. Because he wasn't in the superpower season.
No.
Okay.
I think it might have been the edge or the end of, like, or the beginning of season 6 or the end of season 5, maybe?
No, it was the season 5 finale, because that was when they got blown back into, like, a alternate universe / superhero universe.
Okay. Yeah. Well, because we had, like, the Hiram episode. Was that in season 6?
I don't think so, because he was already dead by then.
I feel like that was recently. Oh, a memorial service is held in Hiram's honor. So that was in season 6. So you're right. He died at the end of season 5.
Yeah.
Weird. It feels like it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. Well, we also had a pandemic happen in all of the middle of that.
Correct.
Our sense of time got extremely screwed.
That is true. All right. So Veronica brings Hiram into the student lounge where everyone and Julian is hanging out. She introduces him and Kevin thinks he's hot. No one saw this coming from him.
I just want to say, even though Hiram is annoying as fuck, Kevin is right. He is hot.
He says they're all big fans and asks if Omiha is filming right now, but Hiram says they're on hiatus. Cheryl says that show went downhill after the first season.
I love Cheryl.
Veronica says Hiram will be joining their English class as a guest lecturer.
Again.
Wow.
Guest lecturer, but then all they're doing is acting challenges.
Dude, I loved that scene. I'm excited to talk to you about it.
No. I know that you loved that scene, and you loved it for the right reasons. That is not a guest lecturer.
No. So, first of all, who brings their dad? My original thing was who brings their dad to school, but it's because he's coming in to, like, do stuff and stuff.
Yeah, he was asked to come. Also, when you were a kid, there was nothing more exciting than your parent visiting school for, like, a fundraising. So everyone was like, ooh, here's my parent. She's, like, they're really cool.
Yeah. And, like, when your parent got to be, like, the one of the chaperones on the field trip.
And they kind of, like, let you do what you wanted, and you're like, ah.
Yeah. I thought it was so funny. Like, it's so weird because Betty and Veronica, like, straight up almost kissed last episode. And then this episode, there was, like, one crumb, which is this scene where Veronica introduces literally only Betty to her dad.
Like, what's going on? Where did the Veronica crumbs go?
But I know that they're coming next episode, which is why I'm waiting to start my fan video that I promised last episode until next episode is over. And then we have a hiatus. Just in case there's something else extra I can add.
Oh yeah, we need more content.
Because something's supposed to happen that episode, so that's what I'm waiting for.
Wonderful.
I did love the moment where Cheryl said after the first season it all went downhill, because of course that's what people have been saying about them for 7 years, so I loved that moment.
It was rightfully earned.
Yeah, it was great. And I also love it because even though Cheryl feels that way, if she does, or maybe she's just trying to seem cool in front of him, I don't know, she's still watching it. You know, like, we saw her actively be like, Evelyn, leave my house. I'm watching Omiha now, and you're not invited to watch it with me.
That's literally us watching Riverdale, where it's like, and we're allowed to bully it, but no one else is allowed to bully it.
Even though it all went downhill after the second season. Well, after the first season, I personally think the second season was the best. But we're still here. We're still watching it, so.
It's still ours.
Yeah, exactly. Something that they say that Hiram is, like, here for is to, like, see what small town life is about. And I'm like, didn't he live here growing up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, what?
Like, and even if you wanted to say, like, well, maybe not in this timeline, I'm like, then why does he own so many things here, though? Because Hermione grew up here? Like, I don't know. Anyway, whatever.
You know what? Let's pretend it's that.
It's Riverdale. Okay, my favorite scene.
Your favorite scene, okay.
In English class, Julian performs a scene from Hamlet. Hiram is not happy with his performance and gives him some pointers. He says he has to believe what he's saying and to never forget that words have power. So as soon as it showed up, I was like, oh my god, not Hamlet soliloquy. Oh my god. Hiram shows up and doesn't correct Julian. I literally screamed out loud, Brittany. Mm-hmm. He said, to be or not to be, that is the question. Whether it's nobler in the mind is... I was like, whether tis nobler, Julian?
Oh.
Whether tis nobler. You can't be saying it's.
Whoops.
I was very upset. Whether tis nobler in the mind.
Of all the things for him to not correct.
To suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune or to take arms against the sea of troubles. And by opposing, end them. Tis nobler. Upsetting for me. And then I was like, wait.
Sorry that happened to you, man.
I was like, wait. Do I like Hiram? I like Hiram in this scene. He's like, I was like, Julian, that was bad, and here's why.
In this moment, I think you like Hiram, and I think that it's fair to like Hiram, because he's doing a genuinely good job and giving good advice.
It was great. I loved it. And I did think it was funny because the guy who plays Julian is, like, genuinely a theater actor and, like, actually a musical theater guy, which is why I'm very excited to hear him sing next episode. And so, yeah, I love this scene.
Same. I really treasured it. I thought it was really fun. And I also really like that I had completely forgotten what this speech was because it's used so often in pop culture, mm-hmm. that it is straight up, yeah. someone being like, oh, should I kill myself? And I'm like, oh, way too many people mm-hmm. deliver that incorrectly.
Right, exactly. You guys should look up Andrew Scott performing this monologue. He's the best Hamlet I've ever seen.
Fair enough.
Yeah. He's just amazing. He's just amazing in a lot of different ways, but one of the things that I really love about the way that he performs Shakespeare is that they don't feel like lines, and they're not supposed to feel like lines, obviously, but when he says it, it feels like every single line is, like, coming to him in the moment, which is exactly how it should be, and I just love it.
I really respect that. I do think it's extremely funny that you, of course, just had to publicly admit that you had a Sherlock phase.
Oh, I have done for several years, yes.
I am no better than Robin. I also had a Sherlock phase, but we don't speak of it.
Yeah. Yeah, in drama classes in high school when we had to, like, do scenes, like, I just did scenes from Sherlock with my friends. Yeah.
Okay, but to be fair to you, I think Stephen Moffat was an absolute wonderful speechwriter, and even though none mm-hmm. of it were, like, aged well, at the time it was extremely good.
Yes, and then when I was in college, we had to, like, take monologues and, like, change them into IPA, which is basically, like, when you go on a Wikipedia page and it says how things are pronounced and you get those weird symbols and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we learned about IPA and what each of those symbols means, and so you had to, like, take the monologue and translate it into actual IPA. Me and my friend Evan used to, like, send each other little notes in IPA because we thought it was cute that it was, like, a little language.
Wait, are you saying, is that the same thing as iambic pentameter?
No, iambic pentameter is the cadence of the way that Shakespeare wrote.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, it's how his lines all go, ba 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 ba.
But what's IPA then?
IPA, I'm not sure what it stands for, but it's basically like the symbols that explain how things are pronounced. So the difference between sounding like ah or a.
Pronunciation guides.
Or e sounding like eh or like etc.
Got it.
So like that. So me and my friend Evan would send each other little notes in IPA, which was really, which was cute. Because if you don't know IPA, you're like, I don't know what this is.
All right. This was your brief, embarrassing segue.
Theater kid. Yeah, exactly.
I was also there.
But yeah, I did one of Moriarty's monologues. I did the you should see me in a crown.
You should
monologue.
See me in a crown.
Yeah.
Babe, yeah. You should see me in a crown.
Ugh, so good.
And then Halsey was like, I'll be having that line.
Yeah. So, Betty goes to Featherhead's office and asks if the Blue and Gold will be getting a new advisor since the old one was Mrs. Thornton. Featherhead says he's actually shutting down the school newspaper. Betty argues that the school needs this to keep the students informed. And he says the Blue and Gold wasn't a real newspaper and Betty has nothing important to say anyway.
I'm like, are you kidding me? No one has something more important to say than a teenage girl.
Truly. And I was like, he's like basically saying what you say is not important, like until later. He's like, yet, basically. And I'm like, so until she's an adult? But then I bet he feels like she'll never have anything to say because she's a woman.
Yep. He will never value anything that she says.
So, great. Okay. Blanche said, I think Alice should have been the new advisor like in season one. That would have been such a way to get her and Betty back on the same page.
It also would have been a great way for her to educate or for her to be educated.
But alas, this show does not care about Alice.
No. Only we do. And there's no reason for it at this point other than she's hot.
Also, I think I have a weird feeling that Machen was a little busy this episode.
Oh, well, you got me there.
Yeah.
fine. If you're going to be making good points.
Yeah, thanks. The next one is just that Betty steals the typewriter from the Blue and Gold because hers was stolen.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, this is mine now. If it's getting shut down, whatever.
All right.
Yeah. Cheryl gathers Tony, Clay, and Kevin and tells them her parents have all their names on the gay list, and if she doesn't confirm them, they'll take away the Vixens. Kevin tells her not to confirm anything, and Tony jumps to her defense saying she would never do that. Cheryl says she needs to figure out who started the gay witch hunt in the first place, and Tony asks who would want her to be kicked off the Vixens.
Interesting. I think it's very funny.
I feel like we should have seen this coming.
That the minute she said that, I was like, oh, it's Evelyn Evernever.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I mean, after we saw her, like, watching them sort of holding hands at Pops, too, like, yeah.
Snitch.
It's crazy to me that Evelyn is getting more of a storyline this season than she did in season 3. That's weird.
It's weird.
Yeah. So we cut to Cheryl confronting Evelyn. Evelyn says she'd be a better leader and role model to the Vixens anyway, and she's hated Cheryl since the beginning. Cheryl is confused because Evelyn wasn't even at the Babylonium when she kissed Tony, so how could she have known? Evelyn says she heard about it and she saw her cuddling Tony at Pop's. And I'm like, see, we told you, we called it.
We were like, girl, you cannot be this public.
She's like, everyone heard about Halloween. I'm like, just because someone wasn't there doesn't mean they won't hear about it. Yeah. Duh, Cheryl. Come on.
She's a girl in love.
I feel like Evelyn's hair was like red or maybe, or like more ginger in season 3. And I guess I didn't notice until now, but it's really dark now. And I'm not sure. Just interesting.
I did not notice that.
Yeah, it's just weird. I'm gonna Google that. Featherhead talks to Archie about Mrs. Thornton. He's concerned that she was trying to indoctrinate him. Archie does not know what indoctrinate means, so he explains that she was helping him write poetry. This is so funny because I didn't read the summary that Blanche wrote ahead of time. My note is Archie doesn't know what indoctrinate means.
Bless his heart. Also, you guys are fools.
You can tell that he's literally like, let me change the subject so that I don't have to talk about whatever that is.
Bless his heart.
So he explains that she was just helping him write poetry. She also gave him some books to read. Werther's cuts in and tells him that that's what communists do. Books make people question the people in charge. He says it's happening right now in Cuba and it cannot happen in Riverdale.
Yes, you can't be educated. Otherwise, you will question the shady, unscrupulous dealings of your own government.
Yeah, Archie's literally like, okay.
Does that sound like a just government to you? No.
I googled it, and yeah, Evelyn's hair is fully ginger. At least in season 3. So I'm not sure what happened, but it's very dark now.
It's way better here.
Oh, really? I like it a lot in season 3.
I like it more here.
Oh, all right.
It's less...
I think
cartoony.
I guess I get it. There's a lot of gingers on this show.
Yeah.
It makes it a little confusing.
Exactly.
Hiram tells Veronica how impressed he is with the Babylonium. She says he can watch the movie while she works concessions. He misogynistically gives her an order and walks off.
I am tired of people speaking to our female characters.
So true.
I think maybe they shouldn't speak at all.
Yeah. Glenn, or Agent Scott, who is still alive and an adult in this timeline, approaches Veronica while she's working and asks how well she knows that man. Veronica says it's her father. Yeah, good point in Blanche's notes here that Glenn was like around the same age as Betty.
Oh, yeah.
In season 5. And now he's fully an adult and she's a teen.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Because
yep.
Like part of me could be like, okay, well maybe he was a couple years older than her, but like then he would have to go through all of FBI training and everything. Yeah, that just doesn't make sense. Yeah, that's just Riverdale. And then this sort of is just giving me Agent Arthur Adams, who was like sort of, I think he was pretending to investigate Hiram in like season 2 or something, and then he turns out to have been working for Hermione. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And he like kept bugging Archie.
My
I remember that guy.
Favorite part of this is that it posits that the FBI can figure out that Hiram is perhaps a communist sympathizer, but can't figure out that he has a daughter somewhere else.
Right. How do you know that guy? Yeah.
How do you know that guy? Well, if you were good at your job, you'd know that's his child.
Yeah. To quote Jackson, Archie's friend from the military, and I quote, "Man, screw that Hiram guy."
So true.
I loved that quote. Oh, that was so funny. I like saved that as a gif and I wanted to use it as a reaction far more than I ever could because then he died that season and I couldn't do anything about it.
We didn't have to put up with him anymore.
Yeah. So Betty sits in her room using her new typewriter. She writes anonymously and says in a voiceover that she feels like a prisoner. Being a teenager is terrible because she's old enough to realize that the world is horrible, but too young to do or say anything about it. She says she wants to know everyone else's thoughts on this, their desires, hopes, dreams, and fears. She explains explains that she's writing the Teenage Mystique, a forum for everyone to send in questions they're too afraid to ask anyone else. They can send her their letters anonymously to a P.O. box. They can address them to the girl next door. At school, she sticks an issue into every locker in the hallway.
Again, this is just a wonderful act of rebellion and of revolution because you can try and keep kids quiet and not ask questions. They always will. It's better to give them access to the information that they need.
With a very, very cool name.
It's such a cool name.
We've got the Black Athena and the Teenage Mystique, bro.
They are on their name, like, game this season.
Did she type out all of that over and over and over again?
No, she would have copied it.
Or could they make copies at the time?
They could absolutely make copies. How do you think they get their assignments out?
Oh, sure. Okay. and then, but I did wonder how she printed out, like, these title pages that she created. I wonder if she, like, made it, like, scrapbook style and then copied that.
Yeah, that's how zines used to be made.
That was so cute.
Because we're actually only... What year is this? 1955?
No, 2023.
Shh, off.
Yes, 1955.
Yeah, we're only, like... 10 years from the creation of zines. Mm-hmm. Well, fandom-based zines, from my knowledge.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I did wonder how she can afford a P.O. box, but they're probably not as expensive as they are now.
Right? P.O. boxes are insanely expensive. For no reason.
I know. And then her going by the girl next door, I was like, who could that be?
No one will, there's many girl next doors in 1955.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah. So Archie is writing in his garage when Uncle Frank, barf emoji, barges in. He knocks... As he's opening the door, the homophobic stink bug asks Archie what he's doing, and Archie says he's just doing some writing. Uncle Frank says he got off the phone with Featherhead, who told him about their meeting. Archie jumps to Thornton's defense, but that's not what Uncle Frank wants to talk about. He's upset that Archie is writing poetry. He says it's okay if he's writing a poem for a girl or something, but other than that, people might think he's gay.
My brother in Christ, what do you think songs are?
He literally was like, Archie, poetry is only for manipulating women. Not for fun.
I was like, Jesus Christ, this man sucks.
I was like, this is the Frank we know. Inconsistent as hell.
Yeah.
For the past like 3 or 4 episodes, he's been like, I'm an ally to Reggie. And now he's back to this.
Yep.
We knew it.
We did. We saw it coming.
Yeah. We learned that Thornton's first name is Edith. And then I also liked that Archie used the word indoctrinate because he just learned it. And it's his word of the day.
Oh, bless.
He said, she was not trying to indoctrinate me.
Because I know what that word means now.
I know what that word means. Look it up, Uncle Frank.
And also, you're a fool, Uncle Frank.
Yep. And Blanche, of course, said, I told you guys not to let him fool you. Uncle Frank is still an evil stink bug man.
You're right.
She was right. At the Pembroke, Veronica and Hiram have Pop's takeout for dinner. Ronnie asks why the FBI is following him and explains that an agent questioned her at work. Hiram tells her that they're investigating him as a possible communist. He recently spent some time in Cuba just to buy some cigars, but the FBI thinks he was meeting with other communists. Veronica asks if that's the real reason he came to Riverdale, so he could hide out. He says yes, and says it was also because he needs a favor from her. He wants her to tell the FBI they went to Cuba together for her confirmation present and that he didn't meet with anyone. Ronnie says she needs to think about it. Hiram says it's fine, he's meeting with a lawyer tomorrow that can hopefully make this go away, but if not, he knows she'll make the right call.
Are you kidding me?
I hate this.
This episode is a perfect example of why Veronica's storylines were always so awful and really did no favors for her as a character.
Correct.
Because she was always just a pawn for someone else and she never had her own agency.
It's really interesting because I feel like... You know, all these people that they're trying to, like, say are communists, and the people who are against communism are, like, the bad guys, you know? So they're saying that, like, the communism thing is, like, for people who are cool. And so I was like, are they trying to get us to like Hiram and think that he's a cool guy? But I don't think that's true, because he's absolutely manipulating her, and it's, like, in a super, super gross way.
That was my confusion as well. I wasn't entirely, and I think the point was perhaps that there is no absolute good and absolute evil side of anything. However, there is a fascist side and a non-fascist side, and you do have to take that into account when having discussions like this. However, I was also very puzzled by this because on the one hand, I think they were trying to tell us that the fear of communism was unfounded and frankly silly.
Yeah.
And that a lot of evangelical religious people use that as an example or as an excuse to turn their culture into a very puritanical culture, which is exactly what's happening now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
On the other hand, you also have, okay, well,
if you have Hiram cavorting with what amounts to Fidel Castro,
yes,
then you have to ask, well, you know, what flavor of communism is this? And, you know, why is he talking with a fascist dictator, according to them? I don't know anything about Fidel Castro, so don't quote me on this. I do think the stance was unclear, but I also think that the entire point was think for yourself. Make your own decisions. There is no good or bad side, which is a very simplistic take, but that's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah, yeah. My other thing about this was that, like, last summer, I'm sure, like, she's a very popular young lady. I'm sure she was, like, doing things with people. Like, I'd be like, I have several alibis. You know, do we also have to buy off these people to not say that I was with them?
Like, isn't it, like...
It's so confusing.
Provable that she was with James Dean?
Or something, yeah. Right?
Right?
I don't know. Ugh, this is weird.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole thing of him being like, I'm sure you'll make the right choice. I'd be like, lying to the government? Okay.
I think it's a wonderful dichotomy with the rest of the episode. It's just sort of...
Yeah.
I'm not going to try and parse the message because I don't know if I have the capabilities to.
Yeah.
But I have questions.
Yeah. So while walking into school the next day, Veronica spots Glenn in his car. She confronts him, and Glenn says he was assigned to follow her. Veronica says knock it off because he doesn't even have any proof about Hiram. He tells her to get in, and they can discuss his proof someplace else. As they're driving off, Archie sees her and is very confused.
Bro, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, because she's driving off with a full adult.
Yeah, if a strange man asked me to get in his car, I would not do it.
Not doing it? Also, I'm supposed to be in school.
RIP to Veronica, but I'm different.
Yeah, Veronica, you're dead. And he also talked about how his partner was, like, dealing with Hiram, and he was dealing with Veronica, and I was like, who's that? Because, well, his partner was Betty, so I just thought that was interesting.
Ooh, good catch.
Yeah. Glenn takes Ronnie to Pops. He tells her that Hiram is un-American, and while he was in Cuba, he met with Vidal Mastro, and he hands her a photo of them together. In the photos, Hiram is canoodling with a blonde woman who I can't tell is Kelly Ripa or not. That's what Blanche said. I don't think it is. Her name is just Kelly.
Oh my god, wait. It would be an absolute slay if it was Kelly Ripa. One second. I know that face very well because I'm a gay woman.
That would be really cool if it was. First of all, because, like, Machen was, like, just on their show, so I feel like they could probably pull it off.
They could Photoshop it for sure.
And also, Kelly Ripa was on the show as Hiram's, like, mistress.
Yeah.
So, like, that would have been a really cool thing.
Hang on. I'm on my way. I didn't have the screen big enough, so I just assumed it was, like, some random blonde woman.
Yeah. I think it's so... These people are always having secret meetings in public. They're like, I have to tell you about something secret. Let's go to Pops. Like, every single time.
The funny part is, like, that's kind of just how... No, not Kelly Ripa.
No, I didn't think so, yeah.
That's kind of just, like... You expect all of these people to be smarter, and then you hear about, like, things that happened at Mar-a-Lago, and you realize none of them are smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was impressed, like, you know, I went on Fidel Castro's Wikipedia page. I'm about to tell you a little bit about him. But the dude that they got to, like, play him in the picture looks quite a lot like him.
Yes, he does.
I don't know if they did any Photoshop on this guy, but wow. That was great work. Great casting.
It was crazy.
Yeah. So Fidel Castro was a Cuban revolutionary and politician who was the leader of Cuba from 1959 to 2008, which is a long time.
Yes.
Serving as the prime minister of Cuba from 1959 to 1976 and president from 1976 to 2008. Ideologically a Marxist, Leninist, and Cuban nationalist, he also served as the first secretary of the Communist Party of Cuba from 1961 until 2011. Under his administration, Cuba became a one-party communist state. Industry and business were nationalized and socialist reforms were implemented throughout society.
Which, of course, all sounds much better than it actually wound up being because you have to take corruption to account for many of these things.
I have to say, like, I feel like I know so little about this. It is so hard for me to comment on so much of the, like, political and even, like, religious leanings that they're talking about this season, especially because, like, I don't know stuff about history. Like, I can't say I've paid a lot of attention to this throughout my life.
It is one of my passions.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that, like, I feel like I can speak on to a degree, but, like, of course, like, I'm never gonna know exactly what I need to do. I actually don't know a lot about Castro other than the bullshit right-wing conspiracy theory. Have you heard this one about Trudeau?
Maybe, but refresh my memory.
One of the absolute dumbest conspiracy theories in Canada
is that our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, who he and I have beef, but he has always showed up for queer people, so I have to give him credit,
is Fidel Castro's son.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, like, that's my the extent of my knowledge of, like, Castro that I can remember is just conservatives being stupid.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So, if you know lots about this, or you know, more about this than I do you feel that this is important or good for Riverdale to be bringing these things up to sort of, like, bring these, like,
issue?
Sure, yeah, let's go with issue. But, like, these sort of issues from the past and stuff like that, do you find that it's important or good to sort of be bringing these back up so that the people who don't know that much about it, or even, like, young people are, like, getting to learn about it now?
Oh, 100%.
Mm. I think this is, one, it's a great gateway to teach teenagers and everyone about the past, but it's also a great commentary on how cyclical our culture is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's an amazing and, like, weirdly thoughtful commentary set in a time that where we don't have the sort of terminology that people tend to balk at. Like, you know, you can't just straight up say, you know, use our terminology or, like, things like, you know, accuse people of being woke and things like that because they're stupid. But it's a great period study of especially for young audiences on what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. And how themes of communism, themes of socialism, themes of capitalism, they are all very gray. They're never black and white. And that's why I'm such a fan of this season. Mm-hmm. I just wound up being so shocked at the, like, especially with this episode, the complex commentary on social issues and communism, especially the Red Scare, because of course then you have that same thing morph into Satanic Panic in the 80s. And of course, now it's the trans panic in, you know, it's the same thing in different time periods.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Archie is at Mrs. Thornton's house. She's surprised that he found her house, but he explains that her name is in the phone book. She tells him that she's moving to Greendale to get a volunteer position at the public library there. And in Blanche's notes, she says she really wants to see Greendale in the 50s now.
That would be cool.
Thornton says they're less judgmental in Greendale, probably because they're all witches.
It's true.
Archie sadly tells her he wishes he could make sense of everything that's been going on. Thornton tells him she has something that could help and hands him a copy of The Crucible. She says it may help him understand what's been happening. He says that's perfect timing because he can do a scene from this for English class. Thornton tells him he's a wonderful writer and that words have power and he should use them to make the world better. And Archie gives her a hug.
See, there's your thesis statement for this season.
It was great.
Teaching through pop culture, teaching through words, teaching through art.
Mm-hmm. Which we see, you know, Betty doing is that she's like, I'm gonna fight this through my words. And that's what Jughead's doing as well.
Yeah. And it's something that I have very deeply believed for a very long time is that I believe that our ability to tell stories in pop culture is going to be our savior in terms of social issues because it is the easiest way to educate a lot of people about very complex subjects.
Yeah. They did The Thing. The Thing is when they say the name of the episode in the episode, which is one of our segments on the Lost podcast. They don't usually do The Thing, so it was cool to see them do The Thing.
Quite thrilling.
And he's like, oh, great, yeah, we have to present a scene this week. And I'm like, yeah, she knows. She assigned that.
Oh, bless.
You were doing it before she left.
He's not very bright. It's okay.
And he said he wanted to do Biff's monologue from Death of a Salesman, and I was like, oh, do that, though. He does great in his thing that he does, but I'm like, oh, that would have been fun, though.
I'm glad he didn't do that. Like, yes, it absolutely would have been fun, but, like,
yeah,
you know.
I love the way that Miss Thornton talks to Archie and tells him how special and wonderful he is in a totally normal, chill way.
Mm-hmm.
I wish so much that I could talk to my students like this without absolutely bursting into tears. I love them so much. I think so highly of them. I think that they could just do anything, and I wish that I could talk to them like that, the way that she does.
Aww.
2 days ago was the last day of school as we're recording this, and I cried the whole time.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It was a lot. It was a lot, and none of you are listening to this, but if you are, I want you to know that I believe in you so much, and I hope you have the best time in high school.
Aww. The little babies. They are gonna do great.
I know.
And you did great, too.
Thanks. So then she offers him a snack. And I was like, wow, a healthy relationship with a female teacher for Archie. I love that so much. And then something horrible happened.
Like, literally the whiplash?
The way that line with the snack was, like, played by Thornton and by KJ, I sort of got the feeling that it was maybe improvised that moment. Because I feel like if it was scripted, Archie would be like, yeah, I'll have a snack. Aww. But it was like, I thought it was sweet that KJ just sort of like went with it and was like, oh no, I don't need one. It was really sweet. I sort of got the vibe that maybe that part was improvised.
Fair enough.
At the dark room, Cheryl is spiraling about her predicament. Tony says they've all been talking and they have a plan to help them out of this, at least for now. Tony and Clay would pretend to date each other while Cheryl and Kevin do the same. Cheryl asks Tony if she's really okay with this because it goes against everything she believes in. Tony says yes, because it will protect Cheryl and the rest of them. I was like, yeah, it goes against what I believe, but I could also be murdered for it. So, like, I'm going to do it to save everything, you know?
I loved this. It's the exact kind of thing that did happen. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we obviously joke about beards, but lesbians and gay men, lesbians especially, protected gay men.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I loved this.
Yeah. And, like, I feel like Cheryl's like, Tony, no one's going to believe that I'm going to date Kevin.
Yeah.
Everyone hardly believed I dated Archie. Yeah. Like, it's not going to work, but okay.
She's like, I am not going to pass that test, babe.
Yeah. I still can't believe the dark room isn't under Pops. That really screws up my brain.
I'm so sorry.
The next scene, we just see Archie reading The Crucible, and he's super into it, which I love for him. Everyone finds, like, that play or that, you know, book for school that you finally actually, like, really get into, and you're like, I get it. And so I just love seeing him in that.
Same.
What was that book for you?
That turned on my love of reading?
Yeah.
I absolutely hate that this is my answer. It was the first Harry Potter book.
Great.
I read it in the parking lot of a Trader Joe's in Spokane, Washington, because my mom couldn't figure out why I was so restless, and she put that book in front of me, and I read the first sentence, and I was done.
What was the first, like, book that you read for school that you actually really enjoyed? Did you have one? Or did you hate all the books at school?
I hated a lot of them. Because a lot of them were really, like, prairies. Like, oh, I hated them so much.
Yes.
First one, I really liked Metamorphosis.
Oh, I never read that one for school.
I was in the advanced English program, so we did some of, like, those, you know, more advanced texts. And I really liked Kafka. It disturbed me in a way that I had never been disturbed before.
Interesting.
And I think that probably was, like, where my love of horror came from, was probably that first exposure to what amounted to body horror.
Yeah.
But the book that I didn't really read anything in school that affected me as much as what I read out of school.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I would say the same thing. There were two books in that I read for school that, like, really spoke to me. On the opposite end of that, I had to read Huckleberry Finn, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn in grade 10.
Yes.
And I wanted to die the entire time.
Oh my God, I hated it.
I hated that book.
Hated it.
It was horrible.
I understand that it's impactful. I understand how important it is. It's supposed to make you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I also just hated the writing. I hated it.
I thought it was so boring, and I literally couldn't read it at school. I had to read it at home because it's written in a dialect, so then I had to start saying it to myself out loud or else I couldn't read the book.
Yeah. I had a hard time with stuff like that as well. That's what I had to do with Shakespeare for a really long time, is I could not understand Shakespeare unless I read it out loud.
So the two books that really spoke to me that I read for school in grade 8, we read The Outsiders, and I loved The Outsiders.
Yeah, I did love The Outsiders.
I loved The Outsiders, and I, like, searched for the movie so that I could watch it. And now I can watch the movie whenever I want, which I love. And I recently, I bought the, like, 50th anniversary edition of the book too. So it has, like, a really beautiful cover and everything. So I really loved The Outsiders. And in grade 12, advanced English, we read The Great Gatsby. And I also really loved The Great Gatsby.
I never got to read Great Gatsby.
Yeah, I loved Gatsby.
Yeah, to this day, I actually still haven't read it.
The other one that I really enjoyed, and honestly, part of it was because of the other students in the class, because we were, like, really close. It was a small class of advanced English students, and at the end of grade 11, I was like, okay, it's getting hard. Maybe I'll take regular English for grade 12 instead of going into advanced English.
That's what I did.
I might have told this story already, but I went in there, and on the very first day, the teacher was like, okay, let's talk about our favorite types of text. And I was like, oh boy, I love text. Movies, songs, plays, you know, anything. All these are types of text. I love text. Sounds great. The other kids in the class did not give a crap about anything she was saying.
Yeah.
And she was my teacher in advanced English in grade 9 and grade 11, which is part of why I moved down so that I could have her as a teacher again. And weirdly enough, she's one of my colleagues now at the middle school.
Bro, that's crazy.
Yeah, and she, like, sort of helped me get my job because I was so good, like, because she thought of me so highly as a student. So now we're, like, co-workers, which is weird. But anyway, so I wanted to stay with her, and everyone else, like, just did not give a crap at all. And so I was like, I think I have to go. I was in that class for one day, and then I moved to advanced English literally the next day. And everyone else was like, yay, you're back. And I was like, oh my God, this was the right decision.
Like, guys, it's brutal out there.
It is crazy how many people do not care about English, you guys. And so then going in and in grade 11, reading Life of Pi together with that group of people was like everything.
Oh, I also didn't get to do Life of Pi.
Life of Pi was great.
I dropped down in grade 12. I did what you did, but I stuck there. Yeah. And the reason I stuck there is, one, because now I understand I had a huge crush on my English teacher. Uh-huh. But two, I got to be teacher's pet. And I had never been teacher's pet before because there were kids who had the ability to concentrate in ways that I did not.
Yeah. Yeah.
In those advanced classes. So I couldn't keep up with them, even though I knew I was really creative, really talented, and I did really well in tests.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't nail the assignments because I didn't have any of the discipline. But in the lower, like, regular track, oh my God. Yeah. I want you to know, that was the year that I was in a car accident. So I didn't go to class a lot. I walked into that provincial achievement test. I scored a fucking 90 without going to a damn class. And she was like, you are the most insane person I have ever met. She wrote me a note.
That's so funny. I feel the same way about you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I love that we were like, here's one sentence of this scene, and then we said, let's go off. But hey, that's what you listen to this podcast for.
No, this is actually really important and relevant, which is the impact that good teachers can have on you and what happens when they are taken away.
So freaking true, Brittany.
I can make anything relevant. Just give me time.
Oh, same. I went to theater school. Like, you show me literally anything, and I go,
You did not.
I go, Isolation. And everyone goes, oh, yeah.
Yeah. I can bullshit my way out of this.
100%. Okay, so Veronica waits up for Hiram to get home. He comes in and says talking to the lawyer didn't help at all. He's still going to be named as a communist.
Well, that's what happens when you commit crimes, dummy.
Veronica says that he needs her to lie and angrily says he wasn't in Cuba to buy cigars. He was at a party with Fidel Castro. Hiram says that's possible they were both at the same party on the same night, but he wasn't there for him. He was there for his mistress, Kelly.
Sure.
Which is so funny that her name's Kelly due to Mark Consuelos' wife being named Kelly.
I think that's very sweet.
Yes. Ronnie is frustrated but asks why he didn't just tell that to the FBI. He says he signed a morality clause, so he still needs her to lie. The family will lose everything if she doesn't. Veronica says she's already lost everything since they banished her here. She can survive that, but she doesn't think that he can. He only cares about his TV show. He shouldn't be asking for favors. He should be asking for her forgiveness.
Yeah, so this was, like, a really common thing to do, like, the morality clause thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as common now, but the minute he said that, I was like, of course, you want to have your cake and eat it too.
Yep.
And you're willing to sacrifice Veronica's entire future. Why? Because she's a woman. Interesting.
I thought Cammy was great in this scene. Mm-hmm. She was awesome.
Cammy was great, and also just another example of how we should not have those characters together ever.
Yeah. I really liked Blanche's note finishing this, which is that he shouldn't be asking for favors. He should be asking for her forgiveness. I liked that because she actually says, you should not be asking me for a favor. You should be asking me for mercy.
Yeah.
And me and Meta were both like, man, why doesn't she say forgiveness? Because then we would have, like, an alliteration thing there. So I like that Blanche also picked up on that.
I like that, but I also think she didn't say forgiveness because he does not believe that he needs Veronica's forgiveness. He needs her compliance.
Right.
So he needs to be...
Right, exactly. He doesn't think he did anything wrong, so why would I need to be forgiven?
Beg for mercy because his life is in her hands now.
Yeah. I am wondering here, and it doesn't matter because Hiram is leaving and this is Hiram's last episode and Hiram is dead, I guess, in the actual timeline. But I wondered about Hermosa and if that was Hermosa's mom, if Hermosa even exists. Probably not, but it is something that I wondered.
I also wondered that.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, when she was like, you were with some woman, I was like, oh my God, I wonder if it's Hermosa. I wonder if it's the secret child thing. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope. They're like, we don't have time for that in this one episode. So, all right, whatever.
Fair enough.
Kevin and Cheryl hold hands walking down the hallway while Tony and Clay do the same. Everybody stares, especially Evelyn. Hilarious, wonderful.
I love gay people.
In English class, Archie introduces the scene he's doing and tells the story of the Crucible. He says this scene is about John Proctor refusing to give up false accusations. He gets really into it, and this is really moving to Cheryl specifically.
It's really cool.
It was very cool. And I loved this. However, I cannot believe they're doing this for English class.
It's interesting, right?
Like, this is drama class. You know, like, this, it's just interesting that they're doing it for English class.
Well, they don't have professionals teaching English right now, so they're like, oh, what's English? Performing stuff, I guess.
I mean, that's true. But also, the fact that all of them, like, commit and, like, actually go for it, unrealistic, but I love it.
Yep, same.
My kids are about to head to high school. I'll tell you, maybe two of them would actually commit this hard in a class like this.
Yep. Oh, it would not happen.
So that was crazy. Yeah. I like that I don't know if he chose Betty as his scene partner, but I did like that she got to do it. And I like that.
I like that we're getting some crumbs.
I liked that this scene from him was really relevant to like all of the storylines this episode.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that I think it is so funny that Archie would be a talented actor. I think that KJ is a talented actor, very talented, but the fact that Archie would be is very funny to me.
I actually did want to ask your opinion on what you thought of KJ's delivery of this.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah.
It was definitely theater stuff. Like, when I first watched it, I was like, whoa, dude, Kate, calm down. I'm watching a TV show. But that's because Archie isn't doing a performance for... Like, KJ's not doing a performance for film.
It's the stage.
He's doing a theater performance, and he's doing it on stage.
That was my thought as well. Yeah.
It was great. I thought it was awesome. And I can't believe this high schooler did an actual tear in this monologue. I loved it. I thought it was great.
That literally was like...
If Hiram was here, he'd be very impressed.
That was the same thing that I got hung up on, is like... Like, why is this such a blown-out performance? And I was like, oh, right, because it's a stage. Mm-hmm. Of course it's a blown-out performance. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And it was just so relevant and, like, so meaningful to so many of them in that room. I thought it was great. It was an awesome choice for a monologue. Whoever's choosing the monologues this episode, great work.
Chef's kiss.
Amazing. So Cheryl dramatically walks into the principal's office. Featherhead, Werthers, and Clifford are waiting for her. Clifford says they were just talking about how cool it would be if she confirmed the gay list. Cheryl says never, she won't be a part of it. She couldn't lead the River Vixens in good conscience if she signed her name away. She renounces her leadership of the team. She tells them she has to go. She and her boyfriend, straight Kevin, are going on a double date with Tony and Clay, who are also straight and dating.
I am so happy.
I'm so proud of Cheryl.
This is not something that I would have believed Cheryl would do a couple seasons ago, and I'm just thrilled.
It was awesome, but screw the other kids on that list. Can't help them.
Well, I'm guessing she can help them, though, because she didn't confirm any of their names, so.
Yeah. I thought it was funny that she's like, here's me and my boyfriend and also her and her boyfriend, so that's the first four names on your list.
Well, and also, like, it's like, if you get those four names wrong, got it. You got none of it right.
Oh, yeah, you're all wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like, I guess, sure, I think gay people don't even exist, Dad.
I've never heard of a gay person.
So don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it. I don't think there are any gays here.
I actually think they're kind of like mythical creatures.
They're like cryptids. Yeah. So probably give up.
Yeah.
Outside, Cheryl tells Tony, Clay, and Kev what happened. Tony tells her they're all grateful since they know how much the River Vixens mean to her. Cheryl says in a just world, she should just be able to be gay and be cheer captain, but this is not a just world. She says she does take some comfort in the fact that with each other, they can all be themselves. And Tony says she hopes Evelyn dies.
I am with Tony on this one.
Yeah, it was great. I love the idea that she's like, but we don't live in a just world yet.
We don't.
Or.
Yeah.
Anymore?
We don't live in a just world where I can be a cheerleader and be gay. And I'm like, oh my god, that's so goddamn funny.
I think it's like, they're like, wait, what's the timeline here? We don't live in a world, in a just world yet, because it's the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Or anymore.
At all.
Because we used to, anyway.
Yeah. If I think too hard about it, I'll get angry.
Exactly. In the student lounge, Veronica approaches Archie while he's drinking a soda. She says his scene was really moving and kisses him on the cheek. Mm. They stare at each other and then kiss on the mouth?
It's a no from me.
I was like, hey, what? Like, he kissed Betty. You almost kissed Betty. Where did this come from and why? First of all, why are you kissing him on the cheek, period?
Mm-hmm.
And then why do you just go for it? I'm just like, I'm so confused about why that happened.
Threesome?
And, like, is Betty gonna find out about it? And is that why they're, like, trying to figure it out next episode?
I think they should just figure each other's bodies out instead.
Yeah, I've heard that from you.
Yeah. I'd rather that than have, I guess, the love triangle had to come back at some point. But I'm like, oh, this is boring. Yeah.
I just thought that was so weird. And then I also liked Machen doing a little, like, I don't know, Coca-Cola ad, hiding the label on the drink, and then, like, being able to show advertisers that she can direct advertisement so that she can get more jobs as a director. And I love that for her.
I love Machen.
I made that up, but I'm sure that's what happened because that was a lot.
You made that up and I was like, yeah, but, like, that's true.
Yeah.
So...
Hiram asks Veronica at dinner if she wants to watch the new ep of Omiha. She ignores him and takes her dinner into her bedroom because she has to work on her monologue for tomorrow.
Literally slay. Love this bitch.
I thought it was so funny that he was, like, so full of himself that he wants to watch his own show. Like, of course watch your own show. Like, of course. But the fact of him being like, my show is on, everyone! Let us go watch my show!
Surely you'll want to watch it, right, Veronica? And Veronica's like, exactly. No, you're gross.
She's like, oh yeah, and watch some other actor play Lil Ronnie.
Because
I'm good.
You cast me out and recast me, which is an insane thing to do.
Sure, Dad.
Yeah, let's definitely watch Omiha. F*** off.
In the gag of the season, in the hallway, Miss Grundy introduces herself to Archie. When I tell you, I screamed no for like a while.
I am mad.
Imagine watching this live. It was insane.
Why is the groomer back?
Here's the thing. I can't remember where I read this. It might have been in the same interview as all this other stuff that Machen said came out. But I think somewhere they talked about how they were like, they brought Miss Grundy back and how they wanted to make it very clear that it was like very platonic and it's like all, like nothing is between them at all and sort of like bring a sort of like closure to the Archie and Grundy thing.
Nope, didn't work.
But that was not clear to me at all.
No, didn't work. You can't have that character be established as a predator and then bring that same face back and assume that people won't think she's still a predator. That's just not going to happen.
Exactly. I haven't finished going through what's going on in the scene yet, but I do have to say, like, you know, she says, like, her husband and all this stuff, and I'm like, but I know what happened before.
Yeah, she says.
But I know, and I can't just get that out of my head.
Yeah, she says all of the right things to make you think that she's non-threatening, but the original Grundy also did things like that, because we went into that show thinking that Grundy, who has always been a trustworthy character from the Archie comics, would be trustworthy. You've already subverted that expectation. You can't then go back and rewrite it.
It's like, I can't even look at her face without thinking that. So, like, even though she's, like, trying her best and everything, and the whole thing, everyone's trying their best to make it platonic,
I don't buy it.
I have this, like, terrible feeling in the back of my head that they're trying to trick me.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's the show's own fault.
Yeah.
That's not your fault.
Exactly. So, Miss Grundy introduces herself to Archie in the hallway. She says she's taking over for Thornton. Thornton was her mentor and told Grundy that Archie was a wonderful poet and very special. If you're trying to make it platonic, maybe don't use words like that.
Yeah.
Grundy says she'd love to continue working with Archie on his poetry. Archie asks if they could keep that between them because Uncle Frank thinks poems are gay. No secrets, please!
Okay.
She says yes and asks if he's ever met a real poet. He says no. Grundy tells him that her husband is a poet and she can give him a book of his poems. Archie thanks her and she walks away.
So at this point, when she is offering all of these same things that his previous teacher did, I'm just thinking, oh, okay, yeah. She's a plant. She's a spy.
Yeah.
She's out.
Yeah. Oh, she's a plant for freaking Clifford.
Yeah. Like, she's out to prove that one.
Oh, no.
The kids were being indoctrinated, and two, the kids are already communist and they're already lost.
The kids are not all right.
The kids are not all right. That was my immediate assumption. Because I was like, why remove one character and bring this one back in to say all of the same things?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Good point. She's too nice.
Yeah. And why is she allowed to do those things and nurture those things in Archie, but what's her face isn't?
Right. And at first I was like, oh good, she's married, like they're bringing up her husband. And I was like, but in the original timeline, she was married and then she like went away from her abusive husband or like whatever. But Grundy wasn't her real name even.
No.
Right? So like, if she's introducing herself as Geraldine Grundy, that's not her name. You're right. She's a spy.
Yeah.
She has to be because that's not her character's name. Her real character's name was like Jennifer or something. Jessica. I can't remember.
And I mean, if we end up being wrong, we end up being wrong, but that's my feeling as of now.
Yeah. Can I say something though, Brittany?
Well, I'd like you
to. This is controversial, but I've been complaining about this, and this is kind of exactly what I wanted, which was surprises.
Damn.
I I literally keep being like, they tell me who's coming back, so I'm not surprised. When I tell you, my jaw dropped in this scene.
Well,
this is exactly what I asked for, and I'm really sorry for for manifesting this.
I guess it worked, and yeah, I do resent you for this.
I'm really sorry.
Thank you.
I hate that they are hiding something, like they're doing secrets together. I hate that. She also said that Thornton was her mentor at Mount Holyoke. Is that a reference to something? It feels like it is, but I don't know. I don't know what Mount Holyoke is. If anyone does, let me know.
Bro, the only thing I can think of is like that British TV show Hollyoaks.
Yeah, I don't know. And then it's interesting that it's poetry and not music this time, because of course before it was music. And he's like, don't poets all live in New York?
Bless.
You live in New York! You live in New York, Archie!
He means the city.
I know, but that was ridiculous. Yeah. And then lastly, Blanche wrote about this scene. Get a job, stay away from him. I can't believe we live in a timeline where Ras brought back Miss Grundy and not Gladys.
Yeah, this is the worst timeline.
Well, alrighty then. So, in another one of my favorite scenes, Veronica, I just really love the scene where they're performing, I guess. Veronica performs a scene from King Lear in which the daughter, Cordelia, has been asked to prove her devotion to her father. I was in King Lear. I did not play Cordelia. In fact, it was the summer where I was in both Twelfth Night and King Lear. So when we did that, you got like a larger role in one play and then a smaller role in the other one. So I had a larger role in Twelfth Night. I played Maria. So I had a quite small role in King Lear, but I do love King Lear. And it was a perfect monologue for her.
It was wonderful.
It was wonderful and perfect. I remember my friend Nicole performing this monologue, and it was great. And I loved that Betty was watching her with heart eyes. And the only other thing is that I wish that Archie didn't make eye contact with Grundy. Stop looking at her. Don't look at her at all.
Yeah, don't look at her and don't let her look at you. Don't let her near you. Go hang out with Reggie. He is safe.
But Cammy, you did a perfect job and it was a perfect monologue for her. I loved it.
Agreed.
I honestly feel like they like brought Hiram back specifically for her to do that monologue. Like that's how good it was. It was great.
Which, I mean, it worked.
Yeah. Veronica gives Hiram an affidavit that confirms that they went to Cuba together to buy cigars. She said she did it for Hermione, and Hiram will have to be honest with her about Kelly Ripa. She calls him a philanderer, and if he doesn't tell Hermione, Veronica will. She also wants the Pembroke to be signed over to her. Hiram agrees to both conditions. So we've got blackmail, we've got extortion, we got two extortions in a row. Last episode extortion.
We got some good old fashioned.
This episode extortion.
Riverdale.
Yay. Betty arrives at the post office to find a giant bag of mail waiting for her, all addressed to the girl next door. I'm happy for her that this worked out so well.
Same.
But I do wonder if she just gets to like keep that bag.
Yeah, probably.
I guess she just keeps it. Good for her.
She'll bring it back eventually.
Yeah, I love that.
Love that you're worried about the bag.
I'm happy for her and I'm excited to see what happens.
I think that's very funny.
Yeah. So in the last scene here, Hermione arrives at the Pembroke. She tells Veronica that when she gets back to LA, they're going to host a press conference to announce that Omiha is ending. The upcoming 7th season will be the last. She rehearses what she's going to say to the crowd, saying she's ready for something new. She also says that they won't be announcing the fact that she and Hiram are getting a divorce. For the first time, she's excited about the future. Hermione offers the idea of spending Christmas here on the East Coast, just the two of them, and Veronica seems pretty happy about this idea.
Robin, we finally got our Hermione-Veronica mother daughter duo that we always wanted but were robbed of.
I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
Like we're really going back full circle, and that's something that I kind of really enjoy about this season so far, is that we're going back full circle, because something that the showrunners and the creatives, roll my eyes, on Lost always said was that when you're telling a story, it needs to be a circle.
Yeah.
And that's something that they did really successfully on Lost, was bring it full circle. And so I'm really interested in this. And, you know, we're going back to Veronica and Hermione living together at the Pembroke. And I love that. I think that's awesome.
We're going to familiar places, but also places that we kind of got robbed of when the story got eaten up by other things.
Yeah. And of course, it's 7 long seasons, and they're talking about it being 7 because Riverdale has 7 seasons.
And oh, that made me laugh because TV shows did not last that long back then.
No. So Blanche wrote, do we know if there's a new Christmas episode this season? I would love that. I can only watch 209 so many times every December before it gets old.
Fair enough.
So my last note this episode was that I was like, damn, everyone's here, like including Mark and Marisol, but Skeet, like, come on, Skeet. And then of course, right after this episode aired, it was revealed that Skeet is not coming back at all.
Fight me.
That it didn't happen.
Fight me, old man.
I cried. I cried because like, it is so sad to me to think that was just the end of their story.
Yeah, the last we ever got of FP and Alice was...
And that yeah,
that kiss, and they broke up, and she...
But he just went to Toledo?
Fucking dating stupid Frank now, who we now hate.
Who we now hate.
Ugh.
We've seen the light. It makes me so, so sad. Same. And I'm like, it sucks because, like, all the writers are on freaking strike, so it's not like once they got... Which, by the way, is totally fair and they deserve. I'm frustrated because the writers aren't getting what they want so they can just keep giving us great TV like Riverdale. Mm-hmm. But so they're all on strike, and so even if, you know, the Skeet's like, I can't come, they can't like go in and rewrite a thing of Alice being like, I got back together with FP, blah blah blah, even if we don't see Skeet, you know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll never get that resolution.
Like, they're just not gonna talk about him again.
Yeah,
and if they do, I'll be thrilled, but I don't know.
And I mean, I know we're like some of the only people who want that, but we want it, so I'm sad.
I want it real bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It kills me that there isn't going to be any new footage of them that I can, like, edit into another fan video.
I know.
Kills me. Bro. Kills me that I've had it all. Okay, so I'm pretty sure, I know that I said this on a podcast, but I can't remember if it was this one or our Patreon-only podcast. I'm pretty sure it was this one, but I got a Riverdale calendar this year.
Yes, you said that on...
Recall this story?
Oakley.
I said that on Oakley?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, okay. Either way, you guys, I got a Riverdale calendar this year. Sorry if I'm being redundant, because my mom usually makes us calendars, and this year she couldn't, so I bought a calendar from the calendar store, and I saw there was a Riverdale one. I said, great, I love Riverdale. June's picture was of Hiram, which was crazy, because Hiram hasn't been on in a long time, and so I was like, weird that they, like, knew that was the episode, or that was the month that Hiram's picture was gonna come up. And this morning I went to go and flip it up, because as I told you, we're recording on Canada Day, which is the beginning of July, and it's freaking FP. It's freaking FP. Now I have to look at him all month.
It's called being robbed.
And it has that thing on the top where it says diner, but the N and the R are gone, so it just says die. And I'm like,
he was like,
it's just FP staring at me saying, die, Robin.
Die.
Die.
Oh, you want me around? No.
I said, I will. Die.
Hard to hear.
Well, thanks, bud. Great.
Are you upset by any chance?
Perfect. Thanks. I am upset.
What?
No one saw this coming from us. Well, all right. Shall we go into segments, Brittany?
Let's do it.
All right. Our first segment is, what did Blanche think? She does not have a voicemail, but she told me to tell you.
Me specifically?
That she thought.
Or them.
Everybody in general.
Got it.
That she thought that Maidchen did a great job.
Because she did.
Which character needs a hug the most? I'm going to give it to Cheryl and Veronica.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I feel good about that.
And my segment is, which MILF was the most badass? I don't know. I guess Hermione for leaving Hiram?
I think it's gotta go to Miss Thornton.
Oh my god. Well, she's not a MILF, though. She's just an older lady.
Exception?
Ah, fine.
It certainly wasn't Miss Grundy.
It's not Grundy, so fine.
What is Sam shipping the most, Brittany?
She's shipping Shoni the most.
Love it. Asexual Jughead? ? The answer is always yes. Ace as hell. Last episode, I accidentally said gay as hell. I guess what I mean is queer as hell. Jughead, super queer. Thanks.
Gay as hell. Lizzo, I have a new remix idea.
And now it's time for our best line award. My best line award goes to Betty and Cheryl for...
So nice to meet you, Mr. Lodge. We're such big fans of your television program.
And especially the first season. It kind of went downhill after that.
That was funny. Comedy.
I love the shade.
And then I have to give an honorable mention to Dilton and Jughead for...
Principal Featherhead put out the word. He's buying comic books off of us.
Featherhead must be trying to dipsy doodle us.
Dipsy doodle is such a funny phrase.
Cole absolutely committing to saying these goofy ass words. Peak comedy. I love it.
Like, thank you so much. I'm glad to hear it. And my favorite line award goes to Cheryl for...
In a just world, a young woman should be able to love who she chooses and be a cheerleader, but clearly we don't live in a just world.
Because what is more relatable than a teenage girl who cannot be a cheerleader and a gay woman? Oh, it's so funny.
And Lance's favorite line goes to Jughead and the random Boy Scout for...
It's a pretty hot issue.
How hot?
So hot, you're gonna burn your fingertips.
Hey.
Goofy.
Fancy. As for the trailer, I am so excited. The blurb is, Riverdale High presents Archie the Musical.
Oh, God.
After Principal Featherhead agrees to let Kevin present him with an original musical written by him and Clay.
I'm afraid.
Kevin, you are not helping the gay allegations.
I'm afraid.
Kevin learns the group might not be as into it as he hoped. Elsewhere, musical rehearsals prompt Archie to question what he wants in life, while Betty and Veronica confront what's going on between them. I'm so excited.
It's about damn time.
We see see Julian and Veronica dancing on a desk. I'm pretty sure that Julian is playing Archie in the, like, in the show.
Oh my god, did Kevin write RPF?
I think so. Julian is playing Archie, as far as I can tell, because he's, like, wearing one of Archie's shirts. And then later we see Archie in one of Julian's shirts, so I'm pretty sure Archie and Julian switched characters.
All I know is pain.
We see a large group of people dancing, including Cheryl. Kevin's talking to a group with Clay at the piano. We see Archie also dancing, the big group dancing some more. We see Betty with the long hair and the ponytail, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. Archie says to Jug at Pops, "Kevin's writing this musical about me." Kevin says, "Who is Archie Andrews?" Archie, I think, maybe playing Julian, snapping. We see Cheryl with Tony, and Tony says something. I listened to it a million times, and I genuinely cannot tell what Tony said. It's a very, very short, maybe one word. I don't know what it was.
All right.
But then Kevin said, "What a bop." Archie says, "What now?"
Oh, God.
We see everyone dancing in their desks at school. It's giving High School Musical, as always. Jughead says, "It's about having to make a choice." We see Clay dressed as Jughead with Archie Julian in the student lounge. Brittany, why is anyone playing Jughead?
I am so...
As if he and Archie are friends.
I am so confused. I'm so... Why is this happening? Why are we meant to suffer, Robin?
Honestly, I'm so excited.
You would.
This is dope. As soon as I saw this trailer, I was like, wait, this is something.
Fine.
This is something. But I'm just, like, so confused as to why Jughead was even written into the musical as if he and Archie talk at all.
Because Ross is actually secretly making his original Riverdale musical.
I'm waiting for it.
So.
Then we see them throw their papers in the air, which is literally what happens in What Time Is It? From High School Musical 2.
Okay.
Kevin says, "You're gonna love it." And like I said earlier, this podcast for the musical episode might be a little bit late because I'm recovering from surgery. But it's okay because we have a hiatus. So I have time. And thank you guys so much for the grace and patience of allowing me to do that. So thank you so much for listening to this episode.
Our music is Terminal by Good News Tunes.
And thank you to those who shared space with us while we recorded this podcast. My aunt is upstairs and she has my dog with her. So actually, I've just been vibing by myself mostly.
Nice.
Yeah.
And bad boy, though.
He's a bad boy.
And thank you to my wife, who has actually been sitting behind me working the entire time because she works on a Saturday and she's a trooper.
Tell her she's an icon.
And thank you to Emily and to our cats, who are both little rats.
Correct.
Yeah. Thank you so much to Sheila Daly, aka Blanche, for writing our scene-by-scene summaries. It is very appreciated.
Truly changed my life.
Yep.
If you're a fan of The 100, we'd like to talk about that show too. You guys hear this at the end of every episode. Nothing has changed. We are on hiatus right now, but we'd really appreciate it if you checked it out. Even if you don't watch The 100, honestly, don't.
Maybe just don't. Just listen to the podcast.
Just listen to us complain the last two seasons.
Yeah, just listen to the podcast. Yeah. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of Stranger Things, we'd like to talk about that show too. We are on season 4 and we've covered the first 3.
Yes, please. If you're a fan of Lost, we'd like to talk about that show too. I have lots of big brain thoughts to say about Lost. We are on season 4. We have guests over there, and it's our longest podcast with a spoiler section at the end. So if you want to watch the show for the first time and listen along, that would mean literally the world to me, and please let me know how that goes.
Yeah, that is really cool. I have heard of people doing that.
Me too.
And I think it is one of the coolest things that I've ever heard.
Truly, me too. And even people who have seen the show are like watching along as the like rewatching along as the podcast comes out. And it like literally means the world to me. I cry when I think about it.
Yes. Thanks, guys. You can follow the Aficionados on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and our new TikTok.
I'd really appreciate that. I've been working really hard making TikToks.
It's true, you have.
Like I said earlier, our Patreon is patreon.com/theaficionados. If you like what we do here, please consider donating. It is expensive with our money and expensive with our time to make these podcasts for you, and we'd really appreciate your help either way. If not, check out the small businesses that are in the description, or just recommend us to a friend, because that's free and it means a lot. Helps.
It really does.
Thank you.
Thank you. You can follow me on Twitter at Britannia, which is BRITTANIA with an underscore at the end.
And you can follow me personally at Robin E. Jeffrey. That's RobynEJFFREY pretty much everywhere. Our next episode is episode 714. It's called Archie the Musical. I didn't write anything down for the title because I thought it was pretty self-explanatory.
Nah.
I'm really excited about it. And so we will talk to you guys then.
Alrighty.
Okay, love you, bye.
Okay, love you, bye.